Hello, everybody. Just a very quick one about Instagram. If you're on it, Meta, the parent company, is reducing the number of political posts visible to users on their feed. This is a real thing, not a hoax. So go to your Instagram profile, tap the three horizontal lines in the top right corner to open the settings tab, scroll down to what you see, click on content preferences, open political content, and turn on don't limit political content. That's an option. Otherwise, you won't see almost anything we post because we are deemed political. Please do that now, or you won't even see the posts about our shows, our fun things. So if you want to see Guilty Feminist content and know when we're coming to a place near you or releasing a new podcast, do it now.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Your personal info, like addresses, phone numbers, and more, are collected and sold by data brokers. But Aura steps in, scanning the web, sending you alerts, and requesting your info be removed. Get Aura's full toolkit, including credit and transaction monitoring, a password manager, VPN, and more. Get a 14-day free trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Megan Rinks.
And I'm Melissa D. Montz.
And like every other person with access to a microphone, we started a podcast.
On Mondays, we release Don't Blame Me, which is an advice podcast where listeners call in and we share our thoughts on situations such as what to do if you're going to your boyfriend's family function and you haven't told him that you previously slept with both his twin brothers.
Then on Thursdays, we release our podcast, But Am I Wrong?, where we ethically gossip about pop culture, politics, our lives, and your lives. Listeners write in and we tell them if they're wrong or right in a situation. Are you the hero or the villain?
On Tuesdays and Fridays, we throw in a little something extra as well.
A little something, something. We strive to create a community grounded in activism, mental health, and inclusivity. Think of us as like your blunt, honest friends who give you advice that you need to hear, not what you want to hear. But we're also always rooting for your success. What we lack in credentials, we make up for in
opinions.
We do that in every episode too.
We're professional, unprofessional. So if you're looking for a new slate of podcasts to add to your routine, we're here for you.
Acast recommends.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
I'm a feminist, but today I sent to like a little friend's WhatsApp group an exciting notification that my husband Tom Selinsky's book, Star Trek, Discovering the TV Series, was number one on the Amazon Guides and Reviews Most Gifted section. And I was like, oh my God, number one, you know. And so I sent it to this little friendship WhatsApp group. And Tom immediately went, oh, but it's only in Guides and Reviews. It's not like an actual number one. And I replied, don't be a girl about it and undermine it. He wrote to the whole group, I'm a feminist, but when my husband downplayed his Amazon ranking, I told him, don't be a girl about it. And I replied, well, you've not been socially conditioned to self-deprecate. I stand by it. And when I do this as an I'm a feminist, but tonight, the audience are going to be on my side. I'm a feminist, but I was wrong. You were not on my side. You groaned at me, and you're wrong. And I'll tell you for why. You are wrong because what I'm saying is right. Don't be a girl about it, i.e. don't act like you've been fucking socially conditioned to go, oh, it's only when you're a fucking white, straight, cis man. Because you've been socially conditioned to go, yeah, number one, baby. So don't come at me with this because I've got enough to do unconditioning my own self-deprecation without having to go, no, he's wonderful, really, when we all know you think you're wonderful and you're just getting me to do that for you. Absolutely not. When I say don't be a girl about it, I mean don't be a fucking girl about it. And that by girl, I mean socially conditioned human being. So thank you very much. I'm right. Everybody else is wrong.
Woo!
love the finger movements as well. That's very hard to do while texting. Like, that was incredible.
Yeah. If you were listening at home, there were some finger movements.
There were some great finger movements. Yeah.
Right.
I'm a feminist, but I saw that the New York Post had called out Gene Hackman, right, for wearing the same vest that he wore a few weeks ago.
Yes.
And it made me feel weirdly good that a 94-year-old man was being held to the same standards as Billie Eilish. You know,
I
told my boyfriend that, and he was like, yeah, you really are like pain for everyone, aren't you, instead of no pain for anybody. I'm like, a little bit of pain for everybody.
I'm a feminist, but yeah. I feel similarly about words like feisty. I say, don't stop describing women as feisty or strong, independent women. Start constantly referring to men as feisty or saying things like, that Jeff Bezos, he's a strong, independent man. That
wow.
Elon Musk, he's a man in his own right. Stuff like that.
He's
stuff like that.
He's a real man boss, isn't he?
Exactly. A boy boss. He's a boy boss. I genuinely feel these words would die really quickly if we just used them on men. Oh. When we complain, we're like, oh, don't call me fine. Don't say that. No. Absolutely wallpaper it for men every single day until they go, this is insulting. Can we just stop using these words altogether? Yes, we can. Yes, we can, boy boss.
Boy boss.
Yes, we fucking can.
Top 10 boy bosses on Forbes.
Right.
And get them to fold their arms.
Top 10 heatrepreneurs.
Heatrepreneurs!
Yeah.
Yes! Oh my God, making space in the corporate world for men.
That's right. What a CEO.
Yes.
What a hero.
genuinely, let's do that. I would love that.
I think we should start. That's my challenge to you this week. Describe someone as a strong, independent man in his own right.
Oh, beautiful. Beautiful.
That's all I'm asking.
Or flourishing. You know, look at that man flourish.
Oh, he's flourishing. Despite his two children, he has managed to become a partner in the firm. Despite the difficult work-life balance that must be for him. How does he have it all?
That's so true.
How? How does he do it? Yeah. How does Jeff Bezos has about fucking 20 children, doesn't he? Or is that Elon Musk? I don't know. They're all the same to me.
Yeah.
They all seem to have a lot of children, too many children. How do they do it? How do they manage? Well, they by not looking after them, obviously. But that's not the implication. If a woman was said to be not looking after them, everyone would just go, well, no, it's no matter what you've done, you've abandoned them.
That's true. Yeah, that is the thing.
You got another one?
Oh, yeah,
Tom's
sorry.
Tom's waving me in.
Is he? Oh, yeah. Shit.
I mean, he's behind the door, I know he is.
You can feel his presence. I'm a feminist, right? But I see...
I'm a feminist, right?
I'm a feminist, right? But I see bin men as a gender-neutral term, right?
Yeah.
Like the word guys or bitches, right? I don't think of any gender. Like, genuinely, if you go, hello, bitches, that's everybody.
That's a generic all-group term.
To me, five guys, it could be like three men and two women.
I agree.
You know, making hamburgers. Like, bin woman... It just doesn't roll off the tongue, you know? Or bin person. Bin person sounds like that's like a... Like, that person is such a bin person.
Yeah, I agree.
Do you know what I mean? Oh, yeah. That's not the...
I'm with you on that. I feel like I'm a feminist, but I've trained myself to say, hey, gang, rather than hey, guys, because I know for some people it feels gendered.
Mm.
But in my head, if I know people really well, I'll say guys. And I sometimes see people flinch when I say it. And I've tried to take it back. But in my head, guys will always be a generic.
Why? Do you know what we should do? Come up with a word that incorporates the top bit of guys. So if we ever make a mistake, they'll be like, hi, guysarellis. Do you know what I mean? No?
Hi, guyettes.
Guyarinos. Gyria.
Hey, gynecologist.
Yeah. That is gender neutral.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, because gynecologists can be any gender. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
I think you could turn it into gang. Hi, gang. Gang-a-lang.
That's
but
good.
I generally say hi, gang, or hi, team, or hi, you know, some troop. Troop with an O-U-P-E. I feel like that one's poncy and pretentious. And
which
don't
one?
Use it. Troop.
Troop.
Hello, troop. T-R-O-U-P-E. Like a theatre troupe.
Oh, my. Oh, or like a... Like troop to me is like in the army. I'm like, what are we fighting? You know?
Yeah, it's got that feeling as well.
The patriarchy.
Onward, no. Feminist soldiers, etc. Yeah.
I'm a feminist. Or did you do? Are we?
No, yeah, I'm. Oh. Yeah, you do another one.
Ooh, okay. I'm a feminist, right? But I used to think when Britney Spears said, "I must confess that my loneliness is killing me now," I used to think that she was talking shite. But then I saw a peer-related study that said that 14% of patients who are lonely are more likely to die. And I wish I believed women before I needed scientific proof. Do you know?
Live from King's Place in London, the Spontaneity Shop presents The Guilty Feminist with me, Deborah Frances-White, guest co-host Alison Spittle, and our very special guest, Professor Vida Candola, Dr. Leola Rangel, and Mariana Zajac, talking about refugees in work. Hello, 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 and welcome. If you're still coming in, then just, you know, pull up a chair. You're probably late because you've been out smashing the patriarchy right in the face, right up until the last minute. Yeah. Some people have been here for hours drinking, but not you. You've come in from, you know, just a bit of patriarchy smashing outside of the bus stop. Anyone smash the patriarchy today? Give us a cheer. Yeah. Excellent. How?
Existing.
I'm going to need more information. What was that?
Existing.
Excellent. It's a low bar. But no, there is, it's true, it's true. There's a joy in just being yourself and proudly and loudly, or even quietly and schmietly. Anybody done anything that they think, yeah, that's a feminist thing? I'm really glad I've done that. Telling a man to do his job. Was he not doing his job? Or did you just think, I'll tell him anyway, because I'm in the mood? Was he doing his job or he's not doing his job? He wasn't doing his job. Now, can I ask, were you in charge of him, or was it just a man you saw on the side of the road and you walking by and you went, do your job, mate? You were not in charge of him, but you took charge of him. How were you not in charge of him? He's technically higher than you. In the same company. So you went up to the CEO and went, mate, do your fucking job, babe. What's his name? Yeah. What's his name? Darren. Darren, excellent. And what? But how did you measure that he wasn't doing his job? He's meant to be doing something. He told someone else, no, I don't need to worry about that. You rang him up and you went, Darren. Darren. Sorted the fuck out. How did he respond to this direction? He said, oh, okay. Listen, that's some hardcore feminism right there. Was there a consequence, an unfeminist consequence of any sort, if he didn't do his job? Does your job matter, is what I'm asking. In the grand scheme of things, is your job important, or is it one of those ones where you just send other people emails so they can send other people emails and no one's sure why the job exists in the first place? You look after parks. After parks. You look after parks and you were supposed to be sorting out. That's very feminist. We need public spaces. We need green spaces. We need spaces where we can just be in public, take our children, just be in nature. That is the most feminist job, to create and maintain public spaces that where you don't have to pay to be, and you can touch a tree or look at a flower or see a bee. That also is contributing to the, you know, if we don't have green spaces, what's going to happen to the environment? What you do is incredibly feminist, and Darren is getting in the way of that feminism. And Darren has now been told, Darren, sort it out, Darren. And if Darren, if you listen to this podcast, we're sure you were busy and we admire you. All right. So usually if you come out, just give us a cheer if you've ever been to the Guilty Feminist before. Just give us a cheer first time out. Just give us a cheer if you listen to the podcast at home. Guess give us a cheer if you don't know where you're at. Notice how those cheers sounded less unfeminist. Less feminist, less feminist. Oh my God, what have I said? They sounded less certain. It's a podcast, it's radio, no one stops you making. We're going to be recording it. So if you do a laugh, you'll hear it at home when you're listening at home. Now, it's Tuesday night, is that correct? Or Wednesday? It's one of those nights, thank you. It's Wednesday night. I'm too busy patriarchy smashing to know what day it is, okay? That's what kind of active feminist I am. I can't be dealing with the days. They were all named by men. Let's be honest. No woman came up with Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. That didn't happen. We were not consulted on the days of the week, and I'll call them whatever I like. That's my particular rebellion. Yeah. We are together! Make incredible woohooing noises for Alison Spittle!
Very. Thanks so much for coming. Let's talk about Beyonce. New album, Cowboy Car, love it. But Jolene, Jolene is like a Dolly Parton song where she's imploring a beautiful woman with auburn hair to not steal her man. And it's one of the most pathetic things put to song. Like, I love it, do you know what I mean? But it really is like, why? Like, Dolly, you're Dolly Parton. You shouldn't be begging anyone to steal your man. Like, and with Beyonce, Beyonce is incredible, but she's not going, please don't steal my man. She's going, don't steal my man because he's happy where he is. Should this be a conversation you have with your husband, Beyonce? Leave Jolene alone. She's been called out for over 50 years now. She's just trying to live her life, no matter what kind of hair she has. I want to talk about, there is a mental health crisis at the moment and a cost of living crisis. And I think the people it's hitting hardest at the moment are landlords. And, I think someone should look out for those guys. Like, they're not speaking up for themselves enough. And, I know it's hitting them hard, because I think the mental health crisis is hitting them hard because they feel a lot of peer pressure, landlords. You know, if their friends are raising the rent and they have no reason to raise the rent, they'll raise it too, just to be in line with their friends. They're very susceptible to pay. I think peer pressure is essentially the markets, right? And my landlord, he's been feeling the pressure a lot. He has. And I felt so bad for him. He came to me very upset. He said, Alison, I'm going to have to raise your rent by 1,200 quid. And I was like, are you okay? Is everything okay at home? And he said, but don't worry, this is only going to come when you sign your next lease, right? And there was a part of me, I live in Camden, love Camden so much. I have a balcony attached to my bedroom, and I really, like, it's so weird. I got really into gardening, and it really helped with my mental health. And I was so annoyed that it was that easy, you know, get a hobby. Why have I been on these waiting lists for the NHS for so long? When I could have just planted a flower. And I love my balcony. I can see like the BT Tower from my balcony. I love the BT Tower, genuinely. I feel like if I was a bit more mentally ill, I would marry the BT Tower. Like, I know it deep within me. Like, I'd wear a bride's dress, walk down Soho. Because it looks like it's ready for marriage. It's wearing a top hat already. Do you know? It's beautiful. And I grow flowers on my balcony. I grow like strawberries. This is the thing, right? I grew strawberries, and this is the first ever thing that I've grown that I've given life to. I'm not going to have kids, but it felt like a kind of like a wonderful outer body experience, like growing this strawberry. And I was like, I've cut out the middleman altogether. Not have this in a supermarket or anything, Alison. This is your thing that you can do anything with. So what I did was I stuck my face into the bush, right? And I bit the strawberry straight off the vine. Like, it was incredible. Like, I felt the life force of the strawberry, leave the plant and go into my body, right? And I was so overwhelmed with this feeling, I fucked my boyfriend straight away. Which is embarrassing to say in that way. And, I also grew potatoes on my balcony as well, which, if I'm honest with you, as an Irish person, feels a bit like a self-hate crime. Especially the first year when it didn't work out. I know. And I'm just kneeling in the soil going, no! Feeling very at one with my ancestors at that point. But to feel more at one with my ancestors, what would need to happen is my landlord would need to break into my house, steal every other bit of viable food from my balcony and my flat, and just leave me there with the bad potatoes. And then 200 years later, shout out, potatoes, at me in an all bar one. That would feel truly at one with my ancestors. It's beautiful. And so what happened was I was so overwhelmed, right, with thinking about, like, I knew that I wouldn't be able to afford to live in my flat anymore. And I thought of all the hard work that I've put into this beautiful balcony. And I thought about the new people that would move into my house and enjoy my balcony, right? And they'll be walking around going, oh, this is beautiful. Look at all these flowers and the strawberries. And what are those? Those are the bad potatoes, right? And a rage overwhelmed me. And I got so angry that I destroyed all of the flowers in my balcony, just ripped up every flower in my balcony. All of it, kicked in the strawberries. And I'm just laughing in the soil, going, ha, 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 ha. Thinking about these imaginary people that I've made up. And then I thought to myself, Alison, you've got 11 months left on this lease. And you've destroyed the only thing that's made you happy, all right? What? You've destroyed the only thing that's made you happy. For what? To not benefit some strangers that you've made up in your own head. And it was at that stage that I felt truly British. I felt like I'd assimilated into British life. You've been lovely. Have a great one. Bye.
Alison Spittle, everybody.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome. Like, what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome. Like, what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey, marketers, advertisers, and business owners. Find yourself chatting up the same audience in the same places, using the same old lines? Maybe it's time to podcast the net further to catch your next customer. With Acast, there's plenty of fish in the sea with more than 100,000 podcasts and millions of listeners. So there's a perfect match for every business. Use our ad platform to cast your net, then narrow down using targeting such as demographic, show categories, audience segments, and more. Find your match, then reel them in. Advertise on more than 100,000 podcasts with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.
Hello, it's Abigailia Shaman, sometimes co-host of Guilty Feminists and winner of Pointless Celebrities, but who's counting? I have some amazing news for you. Global Pillage is coming back, baby. We will be performing Thursday, May 9th, and Monday, June 17th, 7:30 p.m. at King's Place. I am the new host, and we have an amazing panel for you. But what we need is you. We need you, the hive mind, to come to the show. So you can get tickets at kingsplace.co.uk. Remember, the shows are May 9th, June 17th, 7:30 p.m. at King's Place. I'll see you there.
Hello, Guilty Feminists. This is Deborah. Our tour Down Under begins, and we can announce our amazing co-hosts for these shows.
on the 11th of May in Auckland, the 14th of May in Wellington, and the 15th of May in Christchurch. I'm going to be co-hosting for the first time with the incredible stand-up comedian from Aotearoa, Michelle Acourt. I know she's huge in New Zealand and a massive feminist, and I'm very, very excited. We tried to work with her before, and her daughter very inconveniently gave birth that night. I can't think of a more feminist reason not to come. So we're very, very excited. Then we'll be in Adelaide on the 18th of May with Geraldine Hickey. After that, we're coming to you, Perth, on the 20th of May with Claire Hooper. Then we'll be in Sydney on the 23rd of May with Geraldine Hickey. And then we'll be in Melbourne on the 25th of May. I am not allowed to say who the co-host is, but she is a big Australian favourite and she's amazing. I am not allowed to announce her yet because she's so famous and fabulous. And the guest is an A-list Australian star. Again, we're just getting permission to announce her. So I would recommend if you're in Melbourne especially, our tickets are going fast everywhere, but I would recommend if you're in Melbourne especially, you get your tickets now before the announcement is made, because you are going to want to see these people. And we also have some incredible activist voices and other special stuff going on. The last two dates are in Brisbane on the 27th of May with the wonderful Alice Fraser, and in Canberra on 28th of May, we end the tour with Kirsty Wiebeck. Grace Petrie's coming out and she's doing all the dates with me. We're also going to have poets, activists, incredible guests. It's going to be, do you remember how buzzy the tour was last time and everyone was hysterical at the end? It's going to be like that again. So do not miss out. Get tickets now at guiltyfeminist.com and click on live shows. You can also get an ad-free version of the podcast from Patreon, Apple Podcasts or Acast Plus from as little as £2.50 a month. And that really helps to support the podcast and pay all the wonderful people who support me in bringing you The Guilty Feminist every week. You can also show support in a way that costs you nothing by going to Apple Podcasts or Spotify and giving The Guilty Feminist a 5-star review, even though you've done it before, because it really, really helps other people find us in a very crowded market with a weird algorithm pushing people further to alt-right content every week. And so we'd really, really love it if you'd tell people about it, share it online. And now back to the podcast.
Please welcome to the stage our guests for this evening. Our first guest today is a business psychologist, senior partner and co-founder of Pern Candola. Over the last 35 years, he has worked, yes, that's right, he has worked on a wide variety of projects for public and private sector clients, both in the UK and overseas. Please welcome to the stage the incredible Professor Bina Candola, OBE.
Woo! Hiya.
Come and join us, Bina. Thank you so much for coming. Take a seat anywhere here. He is joined by his colleague, a research psychologist at Pern Candola. She has a degree in psychology and an MSc in occupational psychology from the University of Liverpool. At Pern Candola, she researches how to create fair and inclusive workspaces. Put your hands together and make incredible woohooing noises for Mariana Zajac. We also have with us a refugee from Venezuela. As a medical doctor, she currently studies to re-qualify and be able to work as a doctor in the NHS. She is an active volunteer of Doctors of the World National Health Advisor Group. She also volunteers for Voices Network, City of Sanctuary, and other non-profit organisations advocating and campaigning for the rights of sanctuary since 2019. Please welcome to the stage Dr. Nilola Rangel.
I'm sorry.
I took that on myself. We'll
do it like a dinner party. We'll do it like this.
I feel like Christ at the Last Supper, where I'm like, I'm in the middle.
Okay.
All right. One of you will betray me.
I mean, that's really worrying because did you just kiss her? Because that's
not. Oh my God, Judas!
Mariana and Bina, the top line of your study. Is what? What's the elevator pitch of the study that you've done?
That's refugees, legally settled refugees in the United Kingdom who want to work and contribute to British society face just enormous obstacles to find a job at a suitable level. And if they do find a job, to be valued and included in the workplace.
And how did you come to do this research? Whose idea was it? What motivated it?
So it was my idea, and it came about. I was sat on a train one day, and I was sat next to this man, and he was telling me about his struggles to find work in the UK. He himself was a refugee, and he got to the point where he just couldn't find any work. Instead, he started his own business. There was a similar story with his wife. She was a lawyer, but she couldn't practice and was then retraining. And I mentioned it to Binna, and I thought it was really interesting. Is there something going on here where this is quite typical for refugees to not find work, and can we explore what's really happening?
And Binna, you just finance this or fund this yourself because you're a consultancy and you do this sort of like pro bono, this idea of just going, this is something interesting, let's look into it.
That's pretty cool.
I think it's really cool, yeah. So you make money doing other things, but then you just go, this is worth doing for its own sake. We're not going to apply for funding and take it away from anyone else. We just are going to fund this, which I think is absolutely amazing. So you pay Mariana to do this study and presumably do it with her.
Well, Mariana was part of the business, so yeah. We work together, and obviously she gets a salary. We're that good. But actually, we fund the research.
You're a real boy boss. This is incredible.
You're a CEO.
Yeah, CEO. Wow.
But we will fund the research in addition to that. And the advantage we have is we don't have to rely on anybody else. And we can ask the questions that we want answers to, as opposed to don't ask that, don't do this, do that instead. So we can actually just follow our own noses, really, on this.
Wonderful. What was the methodology you used to explore how refugees were being underused and presumably devalued and demoralised, as well as our community missing out on skilled people who want to contribute? How did you go about this?
So initially we did 20 interviews where we spoke to refugees themselves. We did in-depth interviews, really trying to understand their experiences, what their jobs were before they came to the UK, what their jobs are now, what's the difference. And then we followed this up with a survey of 50 senior managers with hiring responsibilities to see if what the refugees were saying could be backed up. And we found that was the case.
So what did your report find? What have you found overall?
So we found that most of the refugees that we spoke to were highly skilled, they had qualifications, they had really relevant work experience that could be applied to the UK, but weren't able to do this. The reasons for this were things such as there was generally a preference for UK work experience, that's what employers would prefer. We also found that there was often discrimination and bias against refugees, whether this was conscious or unconscious. Also, additionally, employers weren't always sure about the law about hiring refugees, even though it is legal. They would sometimes revoke contracts when they found out refugees actually had... So when the refugees... They saw they had refugee status when it was legal. So those were a few of the issues.
So it was legal for that person to have the job, but they'd go, oh, we don't really know about that, and they'd take the job back.
Yeah, and luckily the people would say, actually, this is my right, and they'd fight back. Oh. But it came up a few times, and then when we asked these senior managers who had hiring responsibilities, 50% of them said they didn't know the laws about hiring refugees, and these are people that are making the decisions.
And so the ones that you spoke to had fought back, but plenty, presumably... have not had that felt they had the skills or the language skills or that they wouldn't get the backup, or they probably thought, well, maybe it is not legal for me, you know, they had to question their own status or they just didn't feel after some, you know, pretty serious trauma that some refugees have been through, many refugees have been through, they're not probably going to be like, well, actually, you know, that must happen all the time if 50% of people don't know that if someone's got refugee status that they can work. So what is typical, what jobs are refugees often qualified for and what typically are they offered? What's the disparity?
So I spoke to one man who was a chartered accountant. He'd been working as accountant for 10 years. He was also a visiting professor in his home country. This man now in the UK was working at an off-licence store. He couldn't find any work in the UK. I heard about people who had... worked in marketing before, they had masters in marketing, they were told by job centres to go and work in Tesco or McDonald's. So typically, very skilled refugees are unfortunately told to work in underskilled positions. Mm.
And no disrespect to anyone working in a retail or food service industry, but you know, if your skill and your passion and your training is in something, you don't want the assumption of... no, you need to go and work in fast food. But that's happening a lot.
So it feels like countries are, like, Britain is going, like, we need the best. Like, I hear a lot of people who are anti-immigration go, we need the brightest and the best. And you get bright people, and they don't know what to do with them. Yeah. Like, it just, like, do you know, it does feel like that. What's going on there?
Well, when we did, essentially what the refugees themselves were telling us was reflected in what the employers were telling us. So they felt that their education qualifications weren't taken seriously, their experience wasn't taken seriously. 20% of the employers told us, we think British qualifications are better. Over a fifth of people actually told us something about they didn't trust the character of the refugees.
And they actually, didn't trust the character.
Yeah, that actually they don't have the work ethic.
Oh my God!
And they don't share British values.
What are British values? Being a twat about immigration.
There is a racist element to that, because actually people, it's less acceptable to say that British people are better than those people. And particularly when it comes to Muslims, people actually make reference to values. Their values are not the same as ours, as opposed to saying they're not as good as us. But that's what was coming out. And just picking up on one thing you said, Deborah, but the not being valued, that's absolutely correct. But being demoralised, actually, we were surprised they weren't demoralised. People were putting in 60, 70, 80 applications a day. They weren't receiving 80 rejections a day because very few people actually responded, but they still carried on. They kind of refused to be demoralised.
Wow. They're keeping calm and carrying on. Lovely.
I mean, if that's not a British value...
I know.
In my chosen family, many people will know, is a Syrian refugee. Seems strange to say that now because he's been here, quite a few years. But very early on, he said to me, my goal in the United Kingdom is to pay as much tax as possible because this is my safe port. I didn't grow up here, so I want to pay a lot of tax so I can contribute to the schools and the roads and the hospitals. And I said, don't say that's a Home Office. They won't think you've integrated. No British person would say that, I was like, of course, some of us would be. It was his attitude was no, because that's how I'm going to give back. Is I'm going to start my own business, and he was so happy when he started his own little jewelry business. It was first little; it's not little now, he's a very well respected jeweler. But at first, it was like in his bedroom in our flat, and one Christmas he had to hire someone to come around and put all the necklace, the chains on to get the pendants ready because he'd handmade all the pendants. And he said, I've hired a British person and I've given a British person a job. And it was like an hourly rate for X hours before Christmas. It was a zero-hours contract, don't get me wrong. But British value. integration, my friend. But he was like, I've hired a British person. Like, this is a sort of, and I was like, I think many people who read certain tabloids would be very, very surprised to hear those things. Mm. Now, we do need to hear from someone... Niloa, you are Dr. Niloa Rangel. You're a paediatrician from Venezuela. Can you tell us your story?
Well, I arrived here in 2018, and I was so happy because I didn't bring many clothes, I didn't bring much, but I just brought my medical certificate. I said, well, I'm going to start working in the UK. And when I arrived here, I didn't have many information about how to requalify. It took me a while, to get to know what I had to do. So, I had to pass a language exam, which was quite, difficult, but I decided to do it. And I got my status because I was probably qualified as a good refugee, because here they really select refugees. So they gave me the status in 6 months. But normally people can wait 1 year, 5 years, 16 years. So in the meantime, people are not trained to prepare to work in the future. But I was committed to work. So I started studying English, and then, I passed my language exam. And then, you gotta take another three exams. So I taking all these exams. And then I came to realize that I had to do like a foundation year. So, oh my gosh, this is taking years. So, you know, and the universal credit is still pushing you, you know, you gotta get a job, you gotta get a job. And you know what the guy said? Have you got a spouse? Like, can he support you? I said, really? No, I am independent. I want to work as a doctor or something similar. So I started looking for jobs that could connect me to my medical background. But it was really, really difficult. So, well, because I was determined to do something, so I started volunteering with Doctors of the World. It was quite near, you know, doing something medical, but definitely I've been doing a humanitarian career, and so I've been kind of doing other things, you know, campaigning, advocating for the rights of refugees. But in the meantime, so I'm still on the way to requalify and start working as a doctor at the NHS.
How many years does it take to requalify?
Well, on average, it will take you like 4 years.
4 years. How many years were you a pediatrician in Venezuela?
Oh, gosh. 25 years. So.
25 years?
Yeah. So,
if a British child goes to Venezuela and gets sick, you would see them?
Yeah, of course.
And you would fix them?
Yes.
But you come here.
Yeah,
and you need to retrain for 4 years before you can see a British child.
And in other countries, for example, in Spain, I already got my qualification to just give your papers to the Ministry of Education, and immediately you are requalified. You know, it's just because medicine is the same here everywhere. You know, and we study with the American society, I mean, medicine society, and also the British society. So it shouldn't be different, but we have to go through all these examinations.
Did they not pause that during the pandemic when they were desperately short-staffed? Were you able to, like, volunteer to give vaccinations?
Well, I offered myself to do some vaccination and to help during the COVID pandemic. I said, I've been an immunizer for 25 years, so I can do this, you know? But if you want to train me, I'm open to it. They said, no, because you are a refugee and without about your education. So we would rather train somebody in the UK who's got no background in this field.
At all?
Just
a random off the street? And they train them to give an injection?
Yeah, that happened. And
instead of you?
Yeah, isn't that happened to me and many of my colleagues. And we were like, really? We really want to help. But you know what? I did well. I did go, and I helped.
Because that's amazing.
What, just rode?
Yeah, I did. I just turned up.
So you just turned up and said, I'd like to volunteer. Yeah. And there was what need on the ground, so they went, well, she seems to be able to use a needle. Yeah, go for
it. She's very determined. Oh, let's give it a go. And I had a go, and at the end, I helped.
And they said, actually, she does seem to know. We're all good.
Yeah.
At the local place, they went, yeah, she's fine. But the official thing was no.
Yeah, but I mean, when I applied, they rejected my papers and they didn't even come back to me.
But they were just randomly picking people off the street who'd never injected anything into anyone.
Yeah, weren't they getting like a person who owned a bouncy castle company to make PPE? Wasn't there like blue sky thinking with that? Or if you ran a pub that an MP liked, you can WhatsApp them.
I think it was mostly based on whose brother-in-law you were.
Have you considered getting married to a member of the Conservative Party?
It's true. If you marry
that is
into
a big sacrifice.
If you marry into a family that is currently in the Conservative Party cabinet, that will grease some wheels. I don't know.
You could get a job as a columnist in the Daily Mail if you do that as well. You can double job. And LBC? Oh, you'll have a great career ahead of you.
Can we just come back to Mariana and Binar? Does Niloa's story chime with you? Does that bear out what you found in your study?
Yeah, I think it's a great example. I think it is typical and it's such a shame. We've got really skilled people here that want to work, so much determination, just not given the chance.
The other thing that was mentioned was about... you're seen as a good refugee. Mm. There is this very crude distinction that's made between a deserving and an undeserving refugee. And we found in the survey of employers that over a third of people had more sympathy towards Ukrainian refugees than they did for refugees coming from the Middle East or Africa. And part of that is this notion of a deserving and an undeserving refugee.
And we don't want to minimise the trauma of people from Ukraine, but there does seem to be a racial component to that.
There is a racial component. I think it's more complicated than that. I think because Ukraine is part of Europe, there's kind of more of an emotional connection. The story that's being told about Ukraine, you know, this is like Hitler invading Poland. We've got to stand firm. There's a story behind us that everybody...
We get to cosplay as Winston Churchill and go, it's the Blitz.
No, yeah. but that's all part of it. It brings up all of those associations and memories. Because the Middle East is kind of, we have no idea what's going on there. We don't know the story. And then in addition to that, I think there's an anti-Muslim component. Mm.
Yeah, but you know what? A refugee is someone who has a fear of persecution, no matter the reason. So it doesn't matter whether you fled your country because of war or because you were persecuted. Mm-hmm. I was a medical activist fighting for the rights of my patients because we were having a political situation in my country. And because I was fighting for the rights, because we didn't have medication, we didn't have antibiotics, and on top of this, my people were starving. So I was put into prison, and then they persecuted me, they chased me, so I ended up here, you know. But I do respect the people who are going through a war, but a lot of people are also have reasons to flee their country because it's not easy to leave your loved one, to leave your work, to leave your family, everything that you leave behind. So it's a human right, you know. Work is a human right, yeah. You know.
And that if you'd no qualifications or anything, like, we're happy to have you. Like, it, yeah. You know, you shouldn't have to... The whole idea of value on people is disgusting. Sorry, that's my...
But, yeah, yes, absolutely. We're not saying, oh, all refugees are doctors or refugees have to be doctors to be valid. We're not saying that at all. That's not what this study's about. This study
is
about...
It should be all refugees are welcome.
Yes.
And that should be the conversation.
But once refugees are in the country, if they have a skill and or a talent and or a training, it's wild that in this country we are struggling to find enough people to work in the NHS... And yet we don't have an easy, simple conversion course that facilitates people to, you know, and also, you know, legally, yes, you have to do a conversion course if you come from Australia to the UK because the law's different. But why haven't we got set up legal courses, conversion courses for medicine and language and all sorts of things, teachers? We're crying out for skilled people. And then they say, oh, that's what we want. And then people come here and they don't let them do those things. So what can organisations do to tackle the issue?
Well, so the first thing, we just need to recognise this is a thing. And we need to look at our policies. I mean, half, as Mariana said, actually, half of employers didn't know what the rules and regulations are around the employment. I mean, that's half of employers didn't understand them. Mm. So actually just informing ourselves would be a good thing. Your point, Deborah, about the qualifications, what are the equivalents in terms of qualifications and how do they stack up? And so we can interpret those better. I think the other thing we need to do is actually just, and this includes our business actually, we just need to engage with organisations which are supporting refugees so we can form those connections. The other thing that refugees don't have, and Nilwa's example will be interesting to learn about actually, they have no network. And a lot of jobs, we found out about jobs through our friends and relatives and other connections, but they have no network, so they don't find out. So they are putting in 80 applications a day and no responses because they don't know where the application should be going. So actually just forming connections and supporting the people with those things would help. But we also need to examine our own attitudes and our own biases and prejudices. When we hear the word refugee, what are the associations that typically come up?
I honestly kind of, like, don't know much about refugees at all. Like, it's just not information that really is given. Mm. So, like, when someone's described as a refugee, I'm like, okay, what does that... I don't... Like, it's the same as, if I'm being honest with you, a business psychologist. Do you know? I know they exist. I'm happy for them. But I don't know anything, you know. I'm happy to have you here.
And it's wonderful to be here. The difference is, though, is that whilst we might not know anything, if you hear the word refugee and you hear the phrase business psychologist, the emotions that are aroused by that are actually quite different. The business psychologist, you may have no emotion at all, or you might think, that's interesting.
I'm like, but do you refugee, counsel
for many
businesses?
People, the association will be very negative.
It sounds fancy, though. It sounds like something we should respect and or you probably know a lot.
Yeah.
And there's a sort of a projection that we've grown up with, you know. Mm.
Like, I imagine a business lying back on a chaise lounge or whatever.
Safe. See,
but the point is, it's not necessarily just about knowledge of refugees or knowledge about business psychologists. It's actually knowing the emotions that are evoked when you hear those words and phrases.
All of us should work at trying to change the negative narrative and the stereotypes that are assigned to refugees, because we are people like everyone else. We have the same skills and we want to become an asset and work for this community and give back what is being given to us and contribute to the economy of this country. Because the problem is that we are discriminated, we are underpaid, and then, for example, some women, because there is also a gender gap in terms of employment, as some women end up working, they are underpaid, like £6 an hour, and they work in beauty industry or some jobs that, they are really, really discriminated. Mm. And at the end of the day, you know what we are doing? We are creating modern slavery. And then this government is very determined on fighting against modern slavery, but we are creating more modern slavery.
And so, servitude and depression again, under-resourcing our community.
And mental health problems.
Thank you so much for coming on. We've got to finish this conversation now, but can I just ask you, what can the people in our audience here tonight and our listeners at home do to spread word of your report? Is there a précis of it that they could take into their organisations? How could we act so that your hard work is useful in our community and we see a change?
Yeah, so you can download the full report on perncandola.com and you'll see both versions.
So we go to perncandola.com and you'll see both versions. And is that a précis and also the longer version?
Yes.
Okay, so if you just want the headlines, so you can take them, send them. Everyone should send it to their HR and say, can you just have a look at this? Wherever you are, even if you're in a different country, you're listening from a different country, it will be the same. You know, the same sorts of things will be happening, and it might inspire a study in your country. So send it round to each other. Send it, any small business owners that you know, any HR departments that you know, any recruitment firms that you know, and just get it going around. And you know, maybe you can make some kind of little memes about it that you can put on the gram.
Yeah, mention it at a dinner party. You know, that's what I'm going to do. I read a report, but it actually means I listened to a podcast.
Yeah, that's good. Share this episode with people.
Yeah,
because this is easier than reading the report. It's more fun. You're not saying sorry. It's definitely fun to read the report.
Yeah.
Definitely fun. But it'll encourage people to read the report because they've heard the episode. Don't not read it.
Do you know what they should do to get people to read reports?
No.
They should like slip actual secrets into reports. So you'd be like, did Rebecca Vardy do it? And it's in.
It's somewhere.
We won't tell you what page. You have to read it all.
It's somewhere hidden in this report.
That would be good.
But yeah, if you could share even the précis, a couple of screenshots, send them around to WhatsApp groups. Anyone you know who employs people, and start to try and challenge those attitudes, because there are plenty of refugees who are qualified, overqualified in some cases, and in some cases just breaking into medical centres and insisting on injecting people because they can't. They're out there, people. They're out there. Could I have a huge round of applause for Mariana? Binna? Nalawa? And you have been listening to The Guilty Feminist with me, Deborah Rothers, White Guest Person, with another special guest, Professor Binna Candola, Dr. Nalawa Rangel, Mariana Zajac. The recording engineer was Chris Sharp. The Guilty Feminist theme tune was composed by Mark Hodge. The producer was Tom Sinski. to Rachel Carpenter, Gina Dizio, Zainab Muhammad, and everyone at King's Place, as well as all of you for listening. For more information about this and other episodes, visit guiltyfabulous.com. Okay. Now, it's Tuesday night, is that correct? Or Wednesday? It's one of those nights, thank you. It's Wednesday night. I'm too busy patriarchy smashing to know what day it is, okay? That's what kind of active feminist I am. I can't be dealing with the days. They were all named by men. Let's be honest. No woman came up with Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. That didn't happen. We were not consulted on the days of the week, and I'll call them whatever I like. That's my particular rebellion. So it's a Wednesday night patriarchy.
The Guilty Feminist is provided exclusively from Acast. Find it wherever you get your podcasts.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.
Here's a question for the marketers listening. Want to find that perfect customer beyond the world of scrolling, swiping, and searching? Here's a secret to make sparks fly. Smooth talking with podcast ads. With Acast, you can reach millions of listeners who'll be hanging on your every word. On the train to work, in the gym, or waiting in line for coffee. Start up the conversation with podcast listeners anywhere and everywhere. And they're looking for love. 60% of listeners have a higher trust in brands they've met on podcasts compared to social. Get closer to your audience. Make podcast ads with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.